This week's Sound of Music can only mean one thing at 9:30 on a Friday afternoon. It means Baldwin and the Berg is on your radio waves, your airwaves, however you may be tuning into us. We appreciate it here on RMU Radio. Today is October 9th. We're moving along here, as I usually say to start every show. We're week six of the Robert Morris semester. This is around the 20th or so episode that we've done of this show. But, well, here we are. I'm Austin Bechtold. We'll go around the horn. Introductions. You just showed up a couple minutes ago. Why don't you introduce yourself first, right, Mr. Golvash?
All right, hi. I'm Andrew Golvash, and I'm officially a commuter now.
Oh.
Yeah, he spent all week at home, except for one day, which I didn't realize he was showing up.
Yeah.
I'm Nathan Breisinger, here to complete the trio.
Yeah, let's jump right into it. Pittsburgh Steelers, after the de facto bye week last week, because of the Tennessee Titans piling up of coronavirus cases, we'll face the Eagles at home with 5,500 fans in attendance. Joey Shields may be one of them. We don't know yet.
Do you think Goldberg will snatch a ticket? He's got to be there.
Goldberg, there's no way Goldberg will be there.
I highly doubt Goldberg will be.
Goldberg won't be there. But it's a battle of first place teams, boys, with the Steelers 3-0 and the Philadelphia Eagles 1-2-1 because the NFC East is just terrible. Golvash, break down the garbage division for me.
Okay, so we got the Eagles at 1-2-1, and then the Redskins at
the Washington football team.
We got the Washington Redskins.
That's their name.
I still say Redskins. The Washington football team.
It's like you're doing our project on Wednesday for Multicam, where you cannot say the name of the teams.
All right,
you must say the city that they represent.
I tried my heart out on it. It just slipped.
It's not hard with Washington football team.
The Washington football team went 1-3. The Cowboys, surprisingly, after having one of the best offenses and also one of the historically worst defenses through the first four games of the year, are 1-3, and then
they lost to the Browns.
And then you got New York at 0-4, and they're god awful. So like, this might be the worst division in football, and it's not even close.
Yeah, without Saquon for the Giants,
they're terrible.
He's the only person on that team can actually win a game for them.
And now I'm popping an impromptu question. Do you give up on Trevor Lawrence? Do you give up on Daniel Jones already?
To get Trevor Lawrence?
Do you give up on him already?
I think what the Jets are doing with Sam Darnold.
I mean, whoever the Giants can take, honestly.
I mean, I think I saw Cowher talk about this. Both New York teams are terrible this year.
Yep.
They're going to have a good chance to market Trevor Lawrence.
I mean, for the past like 7 years, both teams have been pretty god awful.
I feel like Daniel Jones isn't that good, but I see what you see in Darnold, but he just needs good pieces.
He has nothing. Sam Darnold plays with, I don't even think there's a good analogy. It's a running dumpster fire every time the Jets try to put out an offense around Darnold. The offensive line's consistently hurt. I don't think I can name you one receiver that consistently does anything.
I can name you one. I can name fantasy stud Jameson Crowder. Gets receptions like nobody.
Yeah, the Jets have never given their quarterbacks weapons at all. It feels like every year they go in and out.
If you put Jameson Crowder on the Steelers, he's your number five receiver. Think about that.
I could see him as a slot receiver.
He's probably your number five.
Yeah, but he's three or four. I say number five, but exactly. That's who the Jets are giving Sam Darnold a throw to.
And Braxton Berrios.
the equivalent to Cole Beasley. That's literally who he looks like.
Yeah, I think it's a struggle for the Jets. But let's talk about the Eagles. Let's break down the Eagles. Miles Sanders, obviously the Woody High product, and a running back with Carson Wentz. Other than that, the receivers are undrafted quarterbacks. They've transitioned to wide receivers. Guys we don't know. Deck chairs and lawn furniture, as Colin Cowherd calls them. I like their defense. Their front four is very solid. Fletcher Cox is in there. Javon Hargrave. They got pieces, but I don't trust any offense in the NFC East to do anything, you know, other than Dallas. But they're even though they'll put up a hell of a lot of points.
No, it's garbage time points.
It's garbage time points, and you know you're not going to get that consistent play at the end of the game when you need it. So. The Eagles altogether offensively, they're going to lean on Miles Sanders because Wentz just has no one to throw to. But it's going to end up being predictable, like I think the Giants were, and I don't think the Steelers are going to have that much of a problem.
Yeah, I think it's the same discussion as we just talked about with the Jets. the Eagles have no receivers. They've tried to rely on that recipe of what worked in the past with Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson, but both of them are hurt.
They're hurt. They have Greg Ward as their number one receiver.
Jalen Reagor was out for a while. I don't know if he's back. He was out with a thumb injury.
I have him on my fantasy team.
He was out on the injured list in week three, but now I think coming into week four, he's – or whatever week we're in now because the Steelers are have everything
week five.
Shifted around. Anyways, Eagles just don't have any receivers. It's a lot on Miles Sanders, but
he's on IR now.
Yeah, they listed him as IR, but like it's a thumb injury. I thought he was off. He underwent surgery. Either way, Eagles have no receivers, and that's been a story for a while for the Eagles specifically.
The last 2 years in specific.
I mean, they finally got some receivers to win them a Super Bowl, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been a story for a long time that they haven't really had someone reliable in the pass catching, you know, area. But Miles Sanders is the guy you rely on in this game. And I don't know how well he's going to do against the Steelers defense, because the Steelers defense is obviously extremely stout and they can stop the run very easily. You know, one of the top five defenses, top three defenses in the entire league. Mm-hmm. And so Eagles, I think, are going to have a tough time walking into Heinz Field and taking on the Steelers.
Breaking down the Philadelphia injury report before we go into the Steelers.
The weekly injury report.
Alshon Jeffrey had an illness, so he did not participate in practice. So I would expect that he would be able to get to go if everything's good physically.
Unless it's surprisingly COVID.
But that would not be listed as illness. That would be just COVID. Listed as something else. Avante Maddox, pit product at corner, had an ankle injury. He did not practice on Thursday.
He's always
for Philadelphia, but I would expect him to give it a go. DeSean Jackson limited with a hamstring. Lane Johnson had an ankle. He's limited. The thought is that he probably will not play. Rodney McLeod also with a hamstring injury at safety was limited. And they had Fletcher Cox was full participant after having the Veterans Day off on Wednesday. And J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, the wide receiver with a calf injury, was a full participant. So looking at it from that perspective, looks like the Eagles have a good chance to get Jeffrey in, maybe even Jackson back. I don't know the likelihood that they will play. But looking from the injury report, it kind of looks like it's a possibility.
Yeah, both of those.
That could change the game potentially.
With Jeffrey and Jackson.
Agreed.
But
I would expect only one of the two to play.
The issue is, I mean, they're both on the wrong side of their prime. I mean, both Jackson and Jeffrey were sort of granted specific time off this season and potentially games off because they're getting up there in age, so they wouldn't wear themselves out. So, I mean, how effective could they be? I know DeSean Jackson's still pretty shifty out there.
He's a deep ball threat no matter how old he is. He always manages to find his way downfield or always ability to make a play. So he's always dangerous.
Yeah, but both, I mean, it's just an issue surrounding this whole receiving core of who's going to be in there on a daily basis, weekly basis. And then you look at Wentz at quarterback, who just can't throw the ball anymore. Like, what has happened? Seven interceptions through four games.
He's just trying to do too much.
Yep.
Because he has so many – there's so much that he has to do to try and carry this team, and he just can't do it.
And, you know, you look at the Eagles, and they were able to win a Super Bowl a few years back, but with Nick Foles at quarterback when Wentz went down.
But they're also really, really good whenever Wentz was playing. They were almost unbeatable.
Yeah, and Wentz was the perfect quarterback to have in there. He's the franchise-type guy. But, I mean, recently, he just hasn't shown it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's kind of sad. I completely forget, like, he used to be that guy.
Yeah, and I understand you saying that he's trying to do too much because what do the Eagles have? Really nothing. But you got to find ways, I think, as for the coaching staff to get Wentz to sort of settle down and rely on other pieces of their team and their offense, get Miles Sanders the ball more. I mean, you got to help.
I mean, some of that has to fall on Doug Peterson then, yeah. Because he hasn't really. I mean, you talk about that Bengals game where, I mean, you talk about being one of the most aggressive coaches in the league, and then you punt it like to end the game and could just settle for a tie. I mean, I don't know. I don't like that. I don't like those decisions. Those type of decisions are what cost you games.
That's why you have to kick the field goal.
Always kick the field goal.
Not really. Running back spotlight provided by the Steelers graphic that just posted. James Conner, Miles Sanders comparison. In three games for Conner, which was really only two because he battled an injury. Sanders has also battled a little bit of injuries, the injury bug as well this year.
Who hasn't this year in the NFL?
And that's a good point. 20 in 40 rushes for James Conner. He has 224 yards and two touchdowns. Miles Sanders in 51 carries, 236 yards and a score. So numbers are kind of similar for the overall body of work. Offensively, yards per game, the Steelers are way ahead. Points per game, obviously they are ahead as well. As Steelers have been consistently around 26, 28 points offensively in the first 3 weeks of the season. Now going into week five with the de facto bye. So let me ask you guys, what do you make of the bye week that was? And do you think the Steelers were robbed? Do you think that the Titans should have forfeited? What's your take on the whole Steelers-Tennessee COVID situation?
Well, I think it's going to be tough, no doubt. What is it, 13, 12 weeks?
13 straight games.
13 straight games of football. I mean, it would have been 3 extra weeks, if I'm correct. Week 7 bye for us.
Yeah, I think we had a week 7 bye, correct?
I mean, it's only 3 extra games, but 3 extra games is a lot in the NFL.
It's a lot also for your 38-year-old quarterback who just came off of an injury and has throughout his career sort of been injury prone with these little nagging ankle and arm
shoulder
just touchy injuries. So you play 13 straight games. I think it's definitely
going to bite us in the butt if we make playoffs, because someone big is going to get injured.
See, I don't think that.
I think
we can relatively be fine because a lot of teams. I mean, normally like the bye week start around week 5, so like it wouldn't have been like. It would like some teams are only some teams are playing 12 like 11
like I said last week like and like
straight.
I said on Sports Talk in the Berg, you have to, for a championship level team, championship contending team, to be able to take the next step and be able to show and prove that they are capable of becoming a championship worthy team, you have to battle through adversity. And you know, it doesn't have to be exactly the same thing. Like Kansas City battled Patrick Mahomes having an injury. They sustain that. Patrick Mahomes comes back and wins the MVP of the Super Bowl. Just looking at other teams. Philadelphia, when they won their Super Bowl, they had to deal with Nick Foles as their starting quarterback with a surprisingly great defense and no Carson Wentz, who would have been the MVP of the league. So I think that this is possibly what you could look at for the Steelers if they make a significant run in the playoffs, as you had to play 13 weeks in a row, no true bye week in week 4 anyway. So that's what I target as potential motivation. And, you know, as Tomlin said, we don't care.
You know, I 100% agree on the fact that every team goes through adversity, especially championship teams. But for the Steelers and for any football team to go 13 straight weeks, I think, especially, like I mentioned, Ben, being older, but also on your big guys, on your line, that's just going to take such a big toll. I mean, going in there every single week, week after week, you're going to see the injuries start piling up. And we've already seen them with Zach Banner and Wisniewski, but it could continue. And you don't want that, because someone like Marquise Pouncey, who's battled injuries throughout his career as well, I mean, everyone, you just don't need those to start mounting up, because there's a little bit of a depth issue on both sides of the ball on the line.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, both sides of the ball are normally battered up throughout the years, and playing all those games straight up, especially with what we have seen recently, I mean, I have a strong feeling that someone big or crucial to the team is going to get an injury, but I just hope that doesn't happen.
Now the Steelers injury report, as you're knocking on wood for the Steelers injuries. The injury report for Thursday, as we read it off as always, Ben Roethlisberger, Marquise Pouncey, and Stephon Tuitt all had the Veterans Days off on Wednesday, as they do mostly every week. So they were listed as full participants in practice, having to be on the injury report because they did not participate on Wednesday. Deontay Johnson was battling a toe injury, and he also is out of concussion protocol. He was a full participant with that toe, and obviously being out of concussion protocol, cleared to go. Juju Smith-Schuster, battling a knee injury, was a full participant on Thursday. After Wednesday, he did not practice. Joe Hayden had an illness, also not COVID. He was a full participant. Marcus Allen and Derek Watt did not practice, and they are both doubtful for Sunday's contest. Allen dealing with a foot injury, listed as a linebacker on the Steelers injury report, and the fullback Watt with a hamstring injury. Now to his brother, TJ, the linebacker, as in battling a knee injury that popped up on the injury report on Thursday after not being reported on Wednesday. He did not practice, but all indications are that Watt will be full and ready to go come the Eagles game at 1 o'clock. So, what do you think is going to happen with Do you think Derek Watt factors in at all in terms of the running game? And, you know, have we really didn't see much of him before the injury. Do you think that I look at Derek Watt as he's more of a later in the season type of factoring player when you're trying to grind out clock at the end of games late in the season, and you're playing that, as Tomlin calls it, December football in the snow and in the cold and just trying to battle the elements. I think that's what that's where you best use him.
Yeah, you can either use him as that, or maybe if Connor somehow surprisingly gets hurt again, you can use him as a goal line back, even like a little fullback dive play if you ever need to. And then, but I also agree with the December football, the hard ground and pound. He definitely has the ability to wear teams down if he needs to.
Yeah, Watt can definitely be an effective tool. I think a lot of people overlook that fullback position on how important sometimes they can be.
I mean, look at Juszczyk.
Yeah, Juszczyk has been one of them. You can look mainstay in the league for a while, and he's made a name for himself.
Well, you can overlook it when they never, you know, they never use his services. And that's kind of what they haven't been doing. He's kind of just been a key special teams player, and that's kind of it. But let's move on. Matt Murray, my guy in goal, is gone. And I wish we had a soundbite for that, but that's okay. Murray,
if we ever get a soundboard.
That's in the work in progress. Murray traded to the Ottawa Senators for John Gruden, not the coach not of the Raiders, in the 52nd overall pick, which ended up becoming a goalie. Very interesting enough. I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
I don't. Anybody should like it unless you're Matt Simkovic and would very angrily after Sports Talk in the Berg run down to the TV studio.
We're finishing up Sports Talk in the Berg, me and Austin, and Matt Simkovic comes running down, freaking out and saying, "How could you ever say Murray is better than Fleury in terms of?
But that's not the question. If he's better than Jarry.
And then he confirmed yesterday he said that. And I was, when he brought it up again to me, he said, I asked him, do you think that Murray was a big part of the championship run? And he said, no. And I said, what do you mean he said no?
That was the context of the discussion, was that time when Murray came up, was he better than Fleury at the time?
Yes.
And yes,
he was lights out.
You put Fleury in there, and we saw it for the years prior to that.
He struggled.
He just struggled. He couldn't last a full playoff series.
No, he would blow 3-1 leads to the Rangers.
Rangers, Lightning. After the 09 Cup, he never was able to find his true form in the playoffs. And
until the 2016 run.
Yeah, but he wasn't starting every game. Murray, Jeff Zachov started a few games.
You can say the same for Jarry, because Jarry has played a total of like 40-50 starts, maybe?
Yeah.
He's never had more than, like, probably 10-12 starts in a season.
I think it's nice to have that balance and your goalie tandem.
I'll have to look up the stats of this goalie. Because my buddy Josh Zabrowski, I don't know if he's listening or not, but he said he had fairly good stats.
And, but back to the Murray-Fleury. Fleury, I don't think is successful if he plays the entire playoffs in both 2016, 2017. He was an important piece in winning the cup with the starts he had and the games that he won. But Murray definitely was the reason they won the cup in terms of goaltending. And I think overall in his time, I mean, this might be one of the biggest rises to success and falls in Pittsburgh sports history in terms of like success levels. You come in and you win two cups, and 3 years later, you're out.
You're the guy.
Yeah.
I thought he was the guy for years to come.
I mean, Bennett, who's the executive producer and oversees the show for Sports Talk in the Berg, I mean, he pointed out perfectly. I mean, the Penguins organizations, as he put it, is schizophrenic. I mean, one day, you know, Murray's the guy, and the next day, it's like, you're gone. Jarry's our guy. Fleury's our guy. The Penguins are always shifting on who they want as their number one, which, I mean,
Casey Smith might be next.
I mean, it might make them – that's why they're usually successful and they make the playoffs every year. But, look, I mean, they're going away from their successful time they had in 2017. You're moving on to Jarry, who everybody's like, oh, he's a younger option. He's one year younger.
And I also want to point out that if anyone wants to try and blame the playoffs on Murray, you're just a complete idiot.
Matsukovic did that too.
Because those playoff series were not his fault. The Islanders were not his fault, and the Canadians were not his fault. The Penguins, the whole entire team looked like they didn't want to be there besides Matt Murray.
He gave up some bad goals in Game 3.
But
as Michael Shuley pointed out,
I mean, other than that, I mean, other than like, I mean, every goalie is going to have a bad. Every goalie gives up a soft goal.
Yeah, but
I
game one and game two, he was very solid.
He was solid. And then Jari didn't do much better in game four.
They started Murray over Jari for a reason in the playoffs, even though Jari made the All-Star team. Just think of it that way.
Are you going to sell your jersey now?
Making the All-Star team is like making the Pro Bowl. No.
And then about this goalie prospect, he's 18.
And he was considered the top prospect out of Finland.
He's younger than us.
He's younger than us, and he had a .914 in the Finnish league.
Yeah, I mean he's been I guess relatively well known over in Finland. He's been on their junior teams, or their U18 teams, been around. I'm surprised they went right away with their first pick in a goalie, but I mean they're replenishing their system. Yeah. Right away after getting rid of Murray. And actually, speaking of that, you know, back in like 2014, 2015, Fleury's sort of struggling. They lost in five games to the Rangers the year before.
Was it five?
I think it was five. They lost to the Rangers the year before they won the cup. And, you know, there's all this speculation about Fleury. You know, he's not the guy anymore. They bring in Murray. But actually, before Murray came up, it was – all the eyes were on Tristan Jarry, but he wasn't fully developed yet.
Right.
So, I mean, who knows if he comes in and he's ready to go. Maybe this year he does, you know, show us and prove us wrong.
I need to see something because
– It can go either way.
I need to see if he can handle the wear and tear of an 82-game season.
Yeah, now look
– if he can handle that, I'll shut right up.
I don't know.
I also heard the defenseman's good too because he's a defenseman, I believe. Gruden.
I don't think that's true.
Is he defenseman? I thought he was.
Gruden's a forward. He had 66 points last year.
He sounds like he's fairly good.
I don't think he's gonna make the team right away.
Yeah,
because you have Sam Poland waiting in line, Nathan Legere, guys like that in the system that would probably be up before him. But in all honesty, I'm sort of sad to see Murray go and upset, and I think he's the better option here.
Yeah,
but I think the return. It's not bad.
Yeah.
I think
the return is
you got what you
decent.
Could get because also
and also if Blomqvist like turns out to be what he is, you can consider it a steal.
I think when Ottawa has three first round draft picks and you don't get one of them, you have a right to be a little bit upset.
Well, I don't think they were going to give them up. I don't think they were going to give that.
Well,
pick
giving
up
a prospect and a second round pick, I'd do that. It's third first round pick straight up from Murray. I think Rutherford was looking for a little value. And then he's still not done.
He said he wants to make a splash.
He wants to make a splash play.
Also, Murray still has to sign a contract with the Senators. I think that's another thing that they were just trying to get rid of Murray so they don't have to sign him. And that's another thing that's the biggest reason they kept Jarry is because of the money. I mean, he just signed for $3.5 million over three years.
But Murray didn't want that much though.
Murray, I think, would have been maybe around four to five million. That would be my guess. I think the Sens will land him for about $5 million. But honestly, we don't have to go in too much on the Sens. But they went from being in the Eastern Conference Finals to the worst team in the NHL, and now they're building to be a really good. They're kind of on the rise. They're rebuilding to be a really good team in two years.
After Chris Kunitz destroyed them, they're getting their prospects.
They're getting their prospects like the Pirates.
Didn't they pick Stutzel, who I think is going to be a stud at three, and then I don't know who they picked at five. I think they picked
Jake Sanderson at five.
Let's do a deeper dive into the draft, Nate.
Yeah, let's get into that.
So I mean. Number one pick who's been compared to Sid the Kid. Yeah, compared to Sid Kidd. Alexei Lafreniere for the New York Rangers.
Now, do you want to talk about a rebuild?
They
have Artemi Panarin.
And also,
so
I wrote up an article for Stranded Sports.
I saw you post that.
Listing sort of the free agency, you know, who's out there. Alex Pietrangelo is your top guy on that list. The Rangers might go after him. They have the money.
Do they still have money if they're signing all those people?
They do have to sign a handful of guys, but they might try to go after Pietrangelo.
I heard he wants to go to Vegas. That's what I saw. One of his main destinations is Vegas.
Well, if I were the Rangers, I'd go and sign Dominic Simone because you know Simone.
I think Cahoon got cut by the Pens.
Cahoon did not get a qualifying offer from Buffalo.
Neither did Dominic Simone.
Yeah, because Simone sucks at hockey.
Now Mike Sullivan can't put Simone on the first line, third line, fourth line, fifth line, anything.
IR.
Yeah, but the Rangers cap space is $23 million. We'll still have to sign Ryan Strome, Brendan Lemieux, Philip DeGiuseppe.
Oh my God, they're gonna
Anthony DeAngelo.
They're gonna have. They're still gonna have
and
like
Alexander Georgiev.
They're still gonna. They're still gonna have like 15 mil.
They're gonna have a lot
15,
of money.
16 mil.
But Pietrangelo is gonna be commanding a lot of money. I mean, he brings a lot of valuable assets to the team.
Do you think he's gonna command 15 mil?
No.
Exactly. So
they're
gonna make a shot at signing him.
He's gonna be projected around 9 mil for the signing.
I mean, but seriously though, look at that team, that Rangers team. They went from possibly one of the bottom dwellers of the NHL to having an elite defense, you could say, with Trouba, DeAngelo, a bunch of high-skilled defensive forward defensemen who can move the puck constantly, and then you have a great forward core.
Yeah, and then they
with Kako, who I think is going to be great in this league because, I mean, he was 18 years old playing.
Yeah, and also the Rangers picked at 19th in the first round, picking Braden Schneider, defenseman, out of the WHL.
This was such a deep draft.
Yeah, you
could have got so much ice, which is why I hate why the Pens gave up that pick.
Yeah,
there was
not the best thing.
There was top three pick overall talent in the 10th pick.
Cole Perfetti was number 10 for the Jets. Marco Rossi for the Wild. All these guys, you know, possess the ability to come in and play right away. There's a lot of guys who could potentially come in and be effective on a team and right out of training camp.
Who did the Wild pick with our pick? Was it – I forget who it was. It wasn't Anton Lundell. I forget who it is.
Yeah, with the Penguins' former 15th overall pick, the
Minnesota
Wild. They moved
that. They only have one pick, and that was the 9th pick. I think they moved it. They traded that pick.
For who?
Was that in the Bonino deal that had occurred? No, it wasn't in the Bonino.
There's no way.
Only had one overall selection in the first round.
They curved it. That's the best part of tests.
So what's the – agreed. So what pick did they have?
Seeing how you can curve one draft pick and somehow get two more.
But I think, honestly, the most intriguing guy in this draft, you know, is Lafreniere. But I look at Quentin Byfield. I think
it's Stutzel. Because he's got comparisons to Pettersson.
How do you know these guys when they're playing in Europe and Switzerland?
You just got to pay attention.
See, that's why I like the baseball draft, because Jonathan Mayo, a local Pittsburgh guy, will be able to tweet it out. I also am very
interested in Byfield because he's tall. He's got something you can't teach, which is size, speed, strength.
We should get Jonathan Mayo on the show.
Who?
Jonathan Mayo, MLB Pipeline.
All right, let's look.
We should get Jonathan Mayo on the show.
And then
I should reach out. I might reach out to him.
So, I mean, also, you look at this draft, deep draft, and then just a few days later, starting today at noon, you have the free agency period hits.
Right.
With a ton of solid players on the market.
Matt Murray's available.
Also,
free
I want your
agency
thoughts. What do you think about the Predators drafting Askarov?
You know, I think it's a good pick.
The heir to Pekka.
Yeah, it comes in, you know, Pekarine, Saros also, you know, the Predators low-key have always had, you know, some solid goaltending, and here's another guy that can sort of come in and fit in a few years. And
stud from the Russian league, Austin, another dude you've probably never ever heard of.
My dad gave me a jersey of the former Penguins like minor league team over in Russia. It's this red jersey. It's really cool.
The Red Penguins or whatever.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I have that jersey. That's the extent of what I know about Russian hockey, other than Ovechkin and
Malkin.
Evgeny Malkin,
Kuznetsov,
being the best players to come from Russia. But let's move on, because they're not playing. The NHL is not playing right now. But you know who is playing is the NBA. The NBA Finals, it might be over tonight. Lakers up 3-1 on the Miami Heat.
They're wearing the Mamba jerseys.
They are wearing the Mamba jerseys tonight, which means it's a guaranteed win
for
the Lakers.
It's an absolute guaranteed win.
Why does it feel like it's been so long since a game? I don't know if it's just been this week.
Did they get a two-day break?
Yeah. It's been a busy week.
It really has been a busy week.
Yeah, we are tired. But you know who's not tired is LeBron.
Something exciting to watch for tonight.
LeBron is balling out. AD is balling out. They look like a phenomenal duo, probably the best in the league. You know, really beating out the crosstown rival Clippers with PG and Kawhi. LeBron and AD just look in sync. And one thing that's really surprised me with the Lakers is how I would always say, this is where Austin was wrong, I'd always bring up their old and not dependable bench. And then you get
– they're dependable.
Yeah, well, more so the role players in the bench, I guess, with KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Kuzma.
Having a great game. Kyle Kuzma has been playing pretty decently. Rajon Rondo has been a very pleasant surprise.
It's playoff Rondo.
A lot of people have, you know, written Rondo off in the past couple of years. So that I think that's what's been really the key for the Lakers to be able to be up 3-1 instead of 2-2 right now.
Yeah, and you see, I mean, Rondo and you look at Dwight Howard as both guys who have sort of had a resurgence here in this postseason. And I think that also deals with being sort of not as the focal points of a team, sort of sitting behind Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And then they can come in and do their thing, and they can work with LeBron and Davis and sort of make plays. And I think that's been, you know, a huge success for this Lakers team is finding that depth scoring and depth productivity.
And I agree. I mean, it's also another key factor when you can take LeBron or AD, take them out one at a time, or even take them both out, and you're still getting production. Because that just means the second they come back in, you have a chance to start building off the lead. Or maybe if you even go down a point or two, you're never going to be able to get those points right back. And I think that's been definitely the key to their success to beat a very banged up Heat team, I must say.
And, you know, the Heat coming in the series really were looking at, you know, they're scoring as a whole, you know, coming in as a collective group. But really the only player that has sort of been there this post and in the finals has been Tyler Hero, yep. Austin's guy,
Jimmy Buckets.
Best 3-point shooter other than Steph Curry in the league.
No,
you have Goran Dragic go down with injury. Bam, banged up.
He came back to play, but he's probably obviously not at 100%.
Yeah, and this team's just banged up, and it's just the Lakers. Like we mentioned last week, they're just too big and too physical, I think, for the Heat sort of to stick around. I had the Lakers sweeping last week. Obviously, that didn't happen. But
I think I called it. I said gentleman sweep. He's going to gentleman sweep the entire league.
I think you got to give credit to Jimmy Butler, though. He had 40.
That was one of – people were saying – I didn't watch the game, but they were saying that was one of the greatest final performances they've ever seen.
It was a great performance. He had 40, 11 boards, and 13 assists in their Game 3 win, the only win that they had. And then you look at this, the battered-up, banged-up team with no Bam – no Goran Dragic. Tyler Hero struggled a little bit, and Jimmy basically carried that team to a win. I thought it was pretty impressive just to see his leadership and his skill set and just how well he plays on the defensive side of the ball, which we knew that.
We all knew what he was capable of doing.
We knew he's a great defensive player, but just being able to see it, and he was 12 of 14 from the free throw line, 14 of 22 from the field. You know, he had a great game. Kelly Olynyk stepped up a little bit, and I don't know. I predicted a Lakers in six. I still think the Heat. I would bet the Heat to win this game tonight.
Not in the Mamba jerseys.
Yeah,
I can't see it happening in the Mamba.
That's
jerseys.
The one thing, because when the Lakers wear the Mamba jerseys, they don't lose. So that's the only thing that would make me a little worry on that. But I still would bet the Heat here. The line is 7 points. You know, in basketball, it's kind of hard to predict with the line.
Yeah,
but
points are impossible.
Right. So LeBron had 28. And 12 boards, and Anthony Davis had 22 and 9 last game.
Now, here's the question. Who do you give the finals MVP to, AD or LeBron?
I think you got to give it to LeBron.
I think it's got to
go. He got snubbed for being the MVP of the league, which he should have been.
I agree. He should have been, too.
He was easily the most valuable player on the team for the Lakers. When you're going through the dominant West compared to Giannis going through Miami and Boston in the East, and that's it.
I mean, no slackers, but I mean, compared to what you have to deal with in the West, it's nowhere close.
Right. Yeah, so
I agree. I think you got to give it
LeBron
to him.
Deserves yeah, it. Also, coming back after last season's injuries and that team that just wasn't too great, getting in Anthony Davis. I know that a lot of people point to Davis's entrance to the Lakers as the main reason why they are better, which, I mean, it is.
It is.
But you got to credit
LeBron. I always say this. The second LeBron hops on your team, you're instantly a contender.
You're instantly a contender. Because LeBron brings teams together in terms of on-court play and skill set, to the point where LeBron is out there at times playing point guard, and he's dictating the offense, and unlike any other big man, power forward type player that LeBron has been in his career, small forward, he plays every position.
He's positionless. He's a positionless player. And then another thing I would like to mention when it comes to that, I mean, you throw just AD on this Lakers team, they're like what?
They're a playoff team, but
I don't think they would barely make it.
They're a playoff team. I give them a playoff team, but they don't move past maybe the first round or second round.
They're not done. But the second they add LeBron, they're they're close. They're LeBron, one game away from a championship.
LeBron, his key timely plays, and Anthony Davis. It definitely is going to be difficult. I think you got to give it to LeBron.
Yeah, agreed.
Today's Irrelevant Fact of the Day brought to you by Irrelevant Facts that Austin liked to provide. It's not an official sponsorship, but there's nothing to promote. But the Irrelevant Fact of the Day today is that in the last 30 minutes, outside the RMU radio room, we've seen a total of three tours.
That's a new high.
Yeah. I think that is a career. That's a career high.
A tour every 10 minutes we've seen outside.
Wow, RMU's enrollment is going up.
RMU must be really recruiting and promoting.
I think it's only like one person, also, or one or two people per each tour.
It's pretty surprising. I don't know. Just a lot of people just watching us, and then we have to wave at them. And
yeah, we
just
had to wave.
As they watch us. We're like lab rats. They tap on the glass. And
yeah, they got to make sure someone's there, you know. So let's go. That was the other relevant factor of the day.
We're just showcase people for the tours.
Right. Now we'll go into quickly the MLB playoffs. Okay. MLB playoffs. Atlanta Braves sweep the Miami Marlins 7-0 was Thursday's result.
No.
Marlins lose their first ever playoff series.
So crazy to think about, and pretty impressive. I know they've only made it two times.
They were what, 7-0?
Yeah. Were they 8-0 coming into this?
What do you call that? That's the first series they beat the Cubs. So what is that?
So I don't. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
it was at 7-0.
They both made it in the wild card era, so it would have been NLDS, NLCS, World Series,
so it is,
3 years.
So seven
with the wild card series. So currently they're 7-1. 6-0 Sanchez took the loss. Kyle Wright pitched very well. 6 innings, 3 hits, 7 strikeouts. Only 2 walks. No runs allowed. And
they allowed us to laugh at the Cubs.
Atlanta looked great. That's Nate's World Series pick.
Last year I went with the bull taking the Nationals, and I'm going another bull taking the Braves.
Very interesting. Interesting is the Houston Astros defeating the Athletics last night.
Dare I say, I'm kind of becoming a fan of this team again.
The Astros.
Dare I say it?
Astros?
They're proving everybody wrong.
Yeah, I had them as well. They're my team as well.
People hate them. They're the villains, but they're proving everybody wrong that they don't need to know what pitch is coming to beat
you. I never really wanted to believe in the A's after Matt Chapman went down, and I don't trust their starting pitching. So in that loss, you just see home runs after home runs. Correa, Michael Brantley twice.
Altuve.
You do have to give credit to the A's organization. They find themselves in the postseason quite often.
Yeah, but they can't get over the hump and win a series.
Yeah, but how often are the Pirates in the World or in the playoffs? Not often. The fact that the A's can get in there.
Well, they're just. I think the A's are just a well-run franchise
with a low payroll.
The Pirates. Pirates should take notes of what the A's do. They're kind of the same. The Pirates are way worse.
And same with the Rays. I mean, the Rays come in with a very, very low payroll, and look at them. They feel definitely a far better team than the A's do. And they are much more competitive when. You see them tied with the Yankees.
And then that all comes down to farm system development. But I mean, most of those guys besides Glasnow, Meadows, and a couple other pieces, most of those players are homegrown.
And now you got to watch in Game 5, Tyler Glasnow versus Garrett Cole.
Yeah, we'll jump into that now.
Is that part two?
Rays,
is that Glasnow,
Yankees,
Cole part two?
Glasnow, Cole is the matchup. Okay, Yankees winning 5-1 over Tampa Bay yesterday. And you got home contributions from Luke Voit and DJ LeMahieu, Gleyber Torres homers. Kyle Higashioka has been phenomenal at catcher, basically the new personal catcher for Garrett Cole. So you'll see him behind the plate tonight, actually, with Cole going up against Tyler Glasnow, which make Pirates fans like me having nightmares in our sleep. So
watch Meadows hit the game.
I think the Rays. Winner. I predicted the Rays to go to the World Series. I'm going to stick with that. I think the Rays beat the Yankees. I always think the Yankees are so overhyped, and then you know the last 10 years they just cannot get over the hump.
And that's my case with the Dodgers.
Right. I
don't know.
I think this is
a different team. Yeah, but we've said that for the past couple of years, and they have not been able to do it.
You go out and you sweep division rival San Diego and just absolutely obliterate them 12-3 in the third game.
The Padres were one of the better teams. I mean, yes, albeit they're young, but they were good. They were a very good team.
And they also had a lot of swagger, and I think that's something they brought in.
They just mopped the floor with them.
Yeah, but who knows? Right. They always go in every year.
Mystery callers calling in.
Can we take our...
All right, mystery caller, before you say your name, our panelists here are going to guess who you are. The mystery caller segment is Austin's favorite segment of the show.
Can we get a hit? Is it a guy or a girl?
It is a guy. It is a guy. That is the – I will not do the
– I think it's Jared.
He or she. So
I think it's Jared.
You think it's Jared.
It's Nick Tarrant.
You think
he's
it's
calling
Nick,
it to the fan.
You think
and
it's Nick Tarrant. Well, you boys are 0-3 to start out the year. All of you. Mystery caller, state your name.
We're not going
to
get it.
This is Tommy Holland.
Tommy is the mystery caller.
The disappointment in the room. I'm sorry, Tommy. Tommy, welcome to the show.
Say that again, Tommy.
Thank you. Disappointment?
That was Nate.
Well, I think...
And no, we're disappointed because we keep messing up. We're wrong on our predictions.
All right, good. I'm missing that anyway, but thank you. I'm honored to be on this show, you know?
Yeah, Tommy, what do you want to talk about today?
Tommy, you want to talk some Notre Dame football?
Notre Dame football is... we're destined to go 10-2, lose to Clemson twice, maybe get upset by Pitt. A couple Ooh. Weeks and, you know, Ooh. Get an above-average bowl game and say we'll get them next year.
Tommy Allen, Baldwin native. Baldwin native that goes to Notre Dame, as we have to point out. Let me ask you, because we are both big Pirates people in terms of our opinions of the franchise. So seeing that the team got Kumar Rocker, what do you make of maybe we'll get Kumar Rocker. The number one pick is secured, I should say. What do you make of the whole situation that the Pirates are in right now?
Yeah, I wouldn't just say we're going to get him. I know the other pitcher from Vandy is just as talented. But, I think that the Pirates are in a very odd phase where they're not necessarily going into a complete rebuild because they have so many young guys on the roster, but they're not necessarily competing. I think for the Pirates, in my opinion, their timeline for competing again is only a two-year turnaround. I think the key for them is next year is basically just like this year is going to be a tryout year for the young guys. Give Mitch Keller more of an opportunity to start a full season. Like guys, like I know Cody Ponce, I believe his last name.
Yeah, Cody Ponce,
number 60. So I'm a big fan of him. What he's able to do at the big league level, and just give some young guys opportunities. A full season of Brian Hayes, and I think what I would like to do. I know you always hate doing this, but I still think. The peak goal, I think, for the Pirates season this year is for Joe Musgrove, Trevor Williams, Polanco and Bell, maybe like Eric Gonzalez to all have really good seasons. And I think we need to trade them away. I think we should trade Josh Bell away because I don't think we're going to be competing soon enough for him to be valuable in a playoff run.
Everybody's going to get traded. Everything sucks.
He's not wrong.
I agree.
No.
I think people thought we should have traded Bell last year.
Honestly, Tommy, I kind of agree with you. Now, the only one I would not get rid of would be Musgrove. I think Musgrove is, I think he compares similarly to A.J. Burnett in terms of the competitive style and the edge and attitude that he brings to a rotation. So in that regard, I would keep Joe Musgrove. But Trevor Williams, I think, got to go.
I mean, even if we get better starters, you can throw him at the bullpen if you need to.
Right. I've always been a big Polanco guy, but, he just hasn't really done it. I mean, when you hit 155, it's hard to be that big of a supporter.
In all reality, what, Tommy?
Go ahead, Tommy.
It's hard to see. I mean, Polanco, he has all the tools and stuff like that. He always posts on Instagram these great workout videos and stuff like that. It's cool enough, but when you go and hit 230 in a season, and a full season maybe only hit 17 home runs, it's just not worth it. I'd rather give young guys like Jerry Oliva, Brian Reynolds the opportunity. And like the players I mentioned before, I think we only have 2 years left with arbitration. So I'd rather to trade them, get some young prospects. But at the same time, if you look at the Pirates' prospects, most of them are either drafted out of college and can be up in 2 or 3 years, or they're in the higher levels of the minor league system. I think if we give opportunity to see like Cole Tucker, Kevin Newman, Kevin Kramer, I don't know if O'Neill Cruz is going to be up here anytime soon due to his off-field situation.
Well, it looks like Ben Cherington expects him to be a full participant in 2021 spring training. He believes that by all the information that they've learned that they're going to call this an accident.
That's great. But I still think it's a human opportunity. Maybe, I'm a big fan of Will Craig. I love Josh Bell and everything like that, but I just don't think that those guys are going to be around in 2 or 3 years from making another run to help with the franchise. Like, maybe you keep one or two of them. But honestly, I think Josh Bell's one season last year may have been a fluke too. I think he's a solid hitter, but I don't think I think the first half of the season kind of gave us too much hope for him being the next coming of McCutchen, which honestly, I don't think he is.
Yeah, I think Will Craig really did just disappear in the organization. I don't really think any of the prospect guys or even the front office really trusts him after being – I mean, he won the Triple Crown in college, third base. Then he changed positions, wins a Gold Glove in the minor leagues at first. And, I mean, no one talked about the bat. He hit, like, what, around 20-plus home runs a couple years ago, maybe 17, driving an 80 run. I don't understand – I just don't understand why you don't give him an opportunity to go out there and play a DH role. Well, or even just put him at first. I mean, you win a Gold Glove – at a position, you should run that guy out there just to see what he's got, and they just have not done that.
Yeah, I think Will Craig is one of those guys. I don't think he's going to be batting 300, you know, having 120 RBIs a season, but I definitely think he could be a solid Colin Moran-type player with more power. Is that maybe bat 260, 270,
right,
hit 23 home runs a year, be a good defender. I'm not saying he's going to be the next have a Josh Bell breakout type season, but I definitely think they should give the young guys an opportunity and use the next 2 years as a type of tryout, you know, and then hopefully some younger prospects can come up too and start contributing. And at the end of the day, the Pirates are going to have to go out and get more veteran players. I don't think they can do that now.
Right.
And like, I want to get back to your point with Joe Musgrove. Yeah, I think Joe Musgrove, I agree, he definitely has a competitive sphere and stuff like that, but there was one thing AJ Burnett brought was that famous Neil Huntington phrase, veteran presence in the locker room.
Exactly.
Which, like, I don't know if Joe Musgrove brings that. I definitely think that he's worth keeping around for the year or two because I feel like he is one of the leaders of the clubhouse, and I wouldn't mind extending him and stuff like that. But I definitely don't think if we're going to be competing for a World Series, he's anything more than a number three or even number four type starting pitcher.
I agree. I think he's a good four. If you put if you try to put Keller, who knows what happens with Tyone, and then let's just say hypothetically Kumar Rocker with Quinn Priester or Brennan Malone, Tanaj Thomas, the upper part, well, the lower part of the minor leagues, upper A ball, I should say, is. That's where the hope is right now with this team, where we saw Swaggerty perform there last season, and Quinn Priester, Malone, Pagero at shortstop. He was at the alternative training site. There are options. There are opportunities for guys that are going to be coming up in the next couple of years. It's going to take time, and I do like the timeline that you put out there. I stay around 22 is when they have a chance to compete for a wild card. I give this next season just for development purposes and see how good Ke'Bryan Hayes really is and play Swaggerty and more young, controllable starting pitching like JT Brubaker and Cody Bolton. So I really like the point you made there. Anybody got any questions for Tommy? Any questions for Tommy?
No, I don't have any questions, but I just wanted to comment way back on, you know, the list that he sort of laid out. If all those guys as a whole, you know, step up and make major improvements,
yeah,
Pirates are a playoff team. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we've seen the flashes from Joe Musgrove, yep, and Trevor Williams. We've seen Bell's season he had last year. All those guys play to their, you know, their highest potential. Team's a playoff team.
But it's the Pirates, so there's never a chance in the world that would happen.
Well, if they keep this goofy 16 teams making the playoff format, then the Pirates do have a better chance. Tommy, what do you make of that real quick?
Wait, do they plan on keeping that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. If everyone plays to their highest potential, but you need every person to play their highest potential. You need Mitch Keller to come out and be an ace-type player, a top prospect. You need Chad Cole to come back and be a contributor to the bullpen. You need Joe Musgrove to use the talent that he has and put it all together and do consistency. But yeah, if every person plays to their highest potential, yeah, we could be a playoff team, but like, everyone's going to have down years. I mean, even look at Brian Reynolds. He batted 320 last year, and was his batting average above 200 this year?
Nope.
But the problem is, like you need every player to play their highest potential, and I just don't think you can expect that every year. But yeah, no, definitely. I think there are some talented guys on the team. And, like, you can argue, hey, well, if this guy, you know, starts putting his tools together and stuff like that, yeah, we could see it going. But I definitely think that it's in the Pirates' best interest to have next year as a trial and allow these young guys to have consistent opportunities. I think that was one of our problems with Tyler Glasnow, too, was we brought him in, brought him to the major leagues. I know this is a different organization, different front office, but we brought him in, put him in the starting rotation, and then after two or three starts, it was always Stephen Brough or Trevor Williams hanging over his head, where they just didn't give him the opportunity to flourish, where I think Tyler things out in Tampa Bay, they basically went out and said, hey, you're going to be our starter for the season. You're going to make mistakes and stuff like that, but this position is yours. So I hope he gives some young guys the opportunity that next year, set out, we're going to try these players first in our opening day roster. But yeah, no, I definitely think there are talented type players, but I don't think that you can realistically compare to the rest of the league and the talent on our roster to say that we're going to be competing next year or even the year after that. I think 2023 realistically is the first opportunity to truly compete for the division or a wild card spot. And hopefully at that time, there'll be some teams like the Cubs and Brewers receding and rebuilding, especially the Cubs.
Yeah, that's going to be a mess on their hands over there financially. Well, I think that, you know, all the best players that are yet to come for the Pirates organization is all enable. And not having an extra year of development this past season where they were all basically at the alternative training site, not knowing where any placement of players is going to be next season. Like, where does Swaggerty go? Does he start? He would have played all year in AA and then been in AAA to start the year next year. Like, what's going to happen with guys like that? What's going to happen with guys like Quinn Priester, who only had a significant, you know, a short amount of time in the alternative training site? But, Tommy, real quick, one last question for you. What would you make of being captain in the Baldwin Wiffle Ball League next season if the opportunity is granted to you?
If the opportunity is granted to me and the COVID situation has calmed down, I would take the honor of being captain again and being at the draft and not having auto pick the last pick.
Yeah.
And being a contributing member. And it should be an easy dub, honestly, if I'm there. Like, not even going to be close, especially with you. Maybe Ace will give me some competition. Ooh. Or things, but... But yeah, no, I definitely would relish the opportunity. Also, name to look out that I'm a big fan of, Cody Bolton. I say it here first, I think Cody Bolton is going to be Pirates' number three, number two starter for years to come.
That's a little bold. Well, Tommy, I hope that the being a captain thing will work out. The execs are going to have to vote. We'll make that vote around January where we plan out Baldwin Wiffle Ball 2021.
The execs will be speaking.
Tommy, thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
All right, see you, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Appreciate it. All right,
man.
Have a good day.
All right, you too. We'll see you. All right.
There's the phone dial.
There's the phone dial as he hung up before me. I think that was our best interview that we've had. That was great. Tommy,
we got someone who probably didn't just wake up.
No, he did not wake up. Tommy was very insightful.
He's been up since 6 a.m. Had to be.
Yeah, when you go to Notre Dame, you're constantly working.
He was definitely taking notes. Like, all right, we're going to talk about him.
Yeah,
he's definitely taking notes.
He brought up a topic. So, how about we bring up that you guys are 0-3. You guys are all
0-3. There's so many names we could guess.
You think the talent pool is that big of names?
Yes,
that
it is. It could have been Meadville.
Oh, yeah.
There's plenty of names to choose from.
There's plenty of names to choose from. Yeah. Basically, everybody in the Wiffle Ball League, we had a relative to choose from.
There's probably, honestly, about 15, 16 names that you could choose from. Honestly,
exactly. We only get like two guesses at it. Well, so in reality,
think about it. As the weeks go on, there's going to be less and less names to be able to guess from.
You'll find more people, guarantee.
Yeah, you'll find. Can we get Muffin on the call?
Bubble Land.
Yeah.
Can we get Muffin on the call?
I think those are both going to be hard sells, but Muffin would definitely agree.
Muffin would want
to
be on.
Let's move on to predictions in the last 5 minutes of the show. Steelers and Eagles. Steelers are favored by 7 in this matchup. Who do you got and why?
I have Steelers, but I'm warning you guys. This is going to be a typical Steelers game. Where they play down to their competition and they win it at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, and it's going to be a score. I think the front four for the Eagles might give the Steelers some problems, but I think we win by a score of 21-17.
Wentz has struggled all year.
Yep.
But the Eagles are somehow first place with a below .500 record. I think the Steelers keep them to a minimum of 7 points.
Wow.
I think the Steelers win 27-7. I think a solid performance.
Through 60 minutes, they could score at least 2 touchdowns and a field goal.
I think a solid performance all around for the Steelers. Defensively, Ben has a solid day on the field. I think you see some production all up and down the receiving core. I think Claypool has a touchdown. I think Deontay Johnson comes back and, you know, it has a big part in this game. I think Steelers take this one.
So last time the Steelers and the Eagles met, the Eagles completely destroyed the Eagles destroyed the Steelers in CenturyLink Field.
When was the last time that happened?
Well, I think it was 3-4 years ago, but it wasn't close. It was like a 20-something point blow. It was disgusting offensively and defensively for the Steelers. I don't think we're going to see a blowout. I think it's going to be – I think you're right, Golvach. I think it's going to be close. I got the Steelers over the Eagles 24-21 with a Boswell field goal in the last 3 minutes to seal it.
I agree. I think this is a perfect recipe for for Steelers to play down to their competition.
Well, yeah, it was typically the Denver game. But I don't know. Cross-state matchup, Eagles – now fans back in the stands. It's got a little vibe that it could be close, you know, even though it is Steeler, mostly going to be like probably 90% Steeler fans.
I don't buy it. I don't think, you know, the offense of the Eagles. The only thing is you have to watch for Sanders, and I honestly think.
You forget about Zach Ertz?
Yeah, but Wentz has thrown 7 picks, and I just don't think he's been so inaccurate over the past couple years.
If he had some pass protection, he'd be accurate. I'm telling you.
So I think you see a wide margin of victory for the Steelers. I don't think it's close.
Tampa Bay and the Yankees facing off tonight. Glasnow and Cole. Which former Pirate do you think will guide their team to the win?
I'm going to have to go with the former Pirate. I think Glasnow gets him this time because didn't he play him last year?
Yeah.
Was it Glasnow and Cole?
I believe so.
Don't quote me on it, but I think Glasnow gets the better of them this year. I think Glasnow pumps a fastball by a couple of them, and I think the Rays win by a score of 7-5.
You know, I'm going relatively high scoring as well.
Because all the games have been high scoring.
I think early you see a dominant pitching performance from both sides, Cole and Glasnow, but I think once you hit like the fifth inning a couple times around the batting order, both teams are going to start popping off, and I think – I'm going 8-6 on the final. I'm going very similar to your score. I think it could be high scoring. I think once you get into the latter half of the game, you're going to see the bats wake up.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that high scoring, but I got 6-4, which in a playoff game, you know, kind of is high scoring.
Which is supposed to be the best of the best.
But that 6-4 game, I have the result of the 6 runs scored being by the Tampa Bay Rays and Tyler Glasnow.
I agree.
I think I have the Rays going to the World Series. I really like what they have, and I think they have a swagger behind them, and they're going to take down the evil empire. Last prediction. I am doing the sideline reporting for Baldwin football tonight. How many errors do I make while on the broadcast?
I say you keep it to a minimum. Mm-hmm. I say 2 or 3.
Okay. Nate?
I'll go 3. I'll stick with a solid 3.
Okay, so you Goldmatch says 2.
And again, now, what would you consider an error?
Nate's
like the
three.
butchering of a name.
If it's a butchering of a Baldwin name, that would be pretty
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, well, it is also high school football, so yeah. I mean, I'm sure no one really knows the other team's name, so right. There's a lot of potential mishaps. But I go 3. I think maybe early.
You think I do bad?
No. I think maybe early. Just some name slip ups. And then you're solid the rest of the way.
I don't know.
You get the feel for things.
Right, I mean,
as long as it goes better than the bowling outing. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, bowling prediction was not great.
I was somewhat close with the first one, but then you didn't get better as the game went on.
I did get better, but then I was not very good. What did I get? Like 113, 119, 119. I was not good.
It was all in the teens.
Yeah, I was just happy I wasn't under 100 that first game because you thought I was going to be. Now let's go to shout-outs. Golvach, go ahead.
All right, I would like to shout out my mom, who was listening, but said she couldn't hear us for the last 5 minutes.
Oh, so. That's great.
Yeah, that's great. But I love you. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back home in the next. I'll be back home in the next half hour.
As you've seen her all week. My shout outs go to Devin, who's listening from work from
Devin.
The mighty Sandcastle.
Devin from work.
Sandcastle is closed. It's still open.
It is closed.
He's on the grounds crew. He's working.
Oh,
he's grinding down there.
Oh my.
Corn's listening from home.
Okay.
I guess is in class. I don't know.
Oh, class. Okay.
Skipping class.
Not skipping class. Her class.
Online class.
Sometimes she doesn't have class. Sometimes she does. But shout out to Corin.
There's Colby as we walk by.
And then shout out to my mom and my sister Allison as they're listening from home.
I honestly don't know who's listening on the count of the Bechtold family. My dad might be listening. I'm not really sure.
Just shout out anybody and everyone.
Yeah, I want to shout out everybody that's come on the show so far. I want to thank Tommy Allen, who gave us the most insightful, I think, interview so far.
Agreed.
Joey Shields, Jeremy Novikowski, and Tommy Allen. We're going through the ball and football league, I guess, at the moment.
That's basically what we're going to do.
Well, no, that's basically because
all of our friends are in the football league.
I want to shout out the family as always. I want to say thanks to everybody for tuning in.
Thank you, Muffin.
And for everybody that we don't know that's tuning in, you know who you are. Thank you for listening in. When I say that, like, I don't even know who I'm referencing. Like, I kind of do, but at the same time, I kind of don't.
So you're just referencing anybody who's like, you know what? Let's listen to this. Oh, wait. Also, oh, hold up. Question. Uh-oh. Oh, sorry. Question? I would like to shout out Bailey, my cousin, who was listening, and I completely forgot
Bailey
to shout
Golbach,
her out.
Your sister or girlfriend?
Yeah, my sister and girlfriend.
That's what people ways. Thought. That's what people both. Thought whenever the picture.
Both ways, but no. Room. My cousin. I'll see you Saturday.
All right. Golbach, do you have a song that we're playing to go out with? Of course not. All right.
What do you mean, of course not? I'm not just constantly looking at my phone, looking for songs.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. All right.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's close out today. Golbach, you have a song or no? Come up with
no,
something. When September ends, do you want to sing? You want to sing something?
Golbach,
start singing.
Golbach on the mic. Golbach.
Wake me up when September.
That's the end of Baldwin and the Berg for this week. I'm sorry you had to go through that experience with Golbach singing.
Wake me up.
That is our show for today. That was a pretty entertaining, pretty fun show. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golbach. Please don't make me sing
again. We'll see you next week if they keep us on the air. Take care.